De overgang. 85% van de vrouwen tussen 45 en 60 jaar ervaart overgangsklachten. Klachten die kunnen leiden tot een verkeerde diagnose of langdurige arbeidsongeschiktheid. Wat kun je doen als je overgangsklachten ervaart? Hoe maak je dit bespreekbaar op je werk? En als jouw medewerker bij jou komt, wat kun je als werkgever dan doen? Sectorinstituut Transport en Logistiek heeft een kennisplatform ontwikkeld waar jij terecht kunt voor tips en adviezen. Wil je er meer over weten? Kijk dan eens op stl.nl/overgang.
Audiohuis.
So, I'll be seeing you.
Showman Walt Disney dies in Burbank, California today at the age of 65.
Hey, Poodle! There she comes!
Walt Disney was the father of movie-length animation.
We had the family fortune. We had everything wrapped up in Snow White.
Dwarfs' names fit their personalities.
He reinvented the amusement park.
And it's about quality family entertainment.
But the easy smile of America's favorite uncle...
Hello, Fred.
In a world of trauma and obsession.
He never stopped working. I mean, he is a workaholic.
Disney's life was one of constant physical pain and crippling anxiety.
Disney was a stress junkie. He just lived on stress.
Walt took refuge in some deadly vices.
He'd light one cigarette with one match in the morning, and then he never used another match.
Walt Disney did not eat healthy food.
But his death at the age of just 65 shocked the world. Walt Disney's death certificate states he died of cardiac arrest brought on by lung cancer. But he died just 5 weeks after diagnosis. With access to his medical evidence, world-renowned forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter is going to investigate what caused his lung cancer and what was going on with Walt's heart that led this icon of popular culture to die so suddenly. You are listening to Autopsy, the podcast. In this series, we analyze the medical evidence in order to understand the precise cause of the tragic, controversial, and sudden deaths of various celebrities. This is Episode 7, The Last Hours of Walt Disney. World-renowned medical examiner and forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter has conducted thousands of autopsies and collaborated closely with law enforcement and other forensic specialists. His expertise has helped to reveal the truth behind mysterious deaths for over 20 years.
Bronchogenic carcinoma, lung cancer, may have been the underlying cause of Walt Disney's death. But the cardiac arrest entry on his death certificate raises important questions. Using information I've found and firsthand accounts, I'm going to look at Walt's life to discover the truth about how he died.
It's late summer 1965, Walt Disney's office, Burbank, California, 15 months before his death. Disney is working into the night on his latest project, the Epcot Experimental Community. At 64, he's showing no sign of slowing down, tells Disney animator Rolly Crump.
He felt at home at the studio, but he never stopped working. You know, even after work, and he went home or whatever, he still would be working on what he's going to do the next day. I mean, he was a workaholic.
The secret of my success might be partly this, that I never actually would admit defeat.
His wife Lillian has been at his side for 40 years. They have two grown-up daughters. But Walt's real home is his studio.
Fire!
Light up the sky. It's the entertainment thrill of a lifetime. Mary Poppins.
Disney's single-mindedness has just brought him his greatest success. 13 nominations and 5 Academy Awards for his musical, Mary Poppins. But Disney pays a high price for his success. The years of toil, the long hours in the office, and the unstinting commitment to quality appear to be taking their toll. Nobody is more aware of this than Hazel George, the nurse of the whole studio. It was her job to try and ease the neck and back pain with which Walt has suffered for decades.
He had a lot of pain, and she'd give him a massage. He hurt himself pretty bad.
Walt Disney undoubtedly felt the weight of responsibility at the studio, and aches and pains are not surprising in a 65-year-old who's still working. But I know that back pain is sometimes a sign of lung cancer. Could Walt's pain be a symptom of the disease that killed him?
Walt was the fourth of five children born to Elias and Flora Disney.
Walt was the baby of the family. He was the artsy one. He was the creative one.
This is film historian Sarah Nielsen.
I think his family understood him as a different entity from them.
Walt's early years were poor and rootless. The family moved around. Chicago, a farm in Marceline, Missouri, then Kansas City, and back to Chicago. The moves driven by his father's business failures. Disney would say that his father wasn't very warm, tells animation historian Tom Cito.
His family life was so colorless. His way of dealing with this was to sort of invent fantasy worlds.
And Walt drew.
He was not going to be a Picasso. He was not someone that was interested in the fine arts.
His future would lie with drawings that moved.
He was interested in art as a popular form, as something that people used as entertainment.
Walt relied heavily on the business savvy of his older brother Roy, and the two formed the Disney Brothers Studio in 1923.
Walt was the dreamer, the visionary who was always looking toward the future.
This is Disney animator Floyd Norman.
Roy had to be the pragmatist. It was his job to come up with the money.
They would argue all the time.
Animator Rolly Crump again.
But Roy said Walt would always win.
In 1924, 25-year-old Lillian Bounds from Idaho joined the studio, animation historian Tom Cito recalls.
Lillian was hired at the studio to help paint the characters. She was like one of the first what we would call ink and paint girls. And Walter and her hit it off, and they got married.
Though she stopped work, Lillian was to play a massive part in animation history. Walt had an idea for a new cartoon character, a mouse.
Walt was originally going to call it Mortimer Mouse. And Lillian was like, that's a terrible name. No, it should be Mickey. Mickey's a better name. And he's like, oh yeah, okay.
The Mickey Mouse shorts made money, but it was Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, the first animated feature, that broke the mold.
Walt Disney said, I want to do a big feature-length film. And no one had made a feature-length animated film before.
The picture that every newspaper and magazine critic is raving about. Snow White, it is an authentic masterpiece.
The film was a massive, massive hit.
Film historian Sarah Nielsen again.
I mean, off the charts hit. It is still one of the highest grossing films ever in the history of Hollywood.
In the process, Walt Disney effectively created an industry.
In the world's film capital is the studio that stands as a monument to the great genius of Walt Disney. He has built an enterprise that employs 700 skilled and highly specialized artistic workers.
For animated family entertainment, Walt Disney was now the only game in town, and it didn't end there.
Here, all the children's tales from Mother Goose to Disney characters come alive.
In 1955, Disneyland opened.
Walt Disney's Disneyland.
More than 50 years after his death, the Walt Disney brand remains amongst the most famous on the planet. It's April 1966, Burbank, California. It's 9 months before Walt's death, and he's working late in the office again. One project has become an obsession. It was called Epcot, the experimental prototype city of tomorrow.
This was Walt's dream, to build this city.
Animator Floyd Norman.
Walt began to look rather tired, and we thought, well, he's working too hard. He needs to take some time off. He needs to go on vacation.
Tom Cito calls Disney a stress junkie.
He just lived on stress. There's always another idea, another project, another job.
Stress was plainly an everyday reality in Walt Disney's life. There is no evidence of any link between that and lung cancer.
Dr. Hunter again.
But it can have a major impact on the cardiovascular system. Stress hormones cause the blood vessels to constrict and divert more oxygen to your muscles, part of the fight or flight response. This raises blood pressure. Frequent or chronic stress will make your heart work too hard for too long and potentially cause damage. Walt Disney was certainly a candidate for this. But chronic stress can also affect your mental health. And I can see that in 1931, Walt had the first of several breakdowns.
The breakdown was definitely financial pressure,
says Sarah Nelson.
So they're not making money. And he had nervous breakdowns throughout. I mean, he emotionally was vulnerable.
An enforced break with Lillian was the usual prescription for Walt's psychological distress, but he could never really turn off.
Whenever they were on vacation, he was always looking at projects, overseeing projects, was always involved.
Walt Disney prioritized work over everything else, including his health. Given that he was working right up until his death, it is impossible to exclude stress as having played a role.
And dealing with stress can often lead to some dangerous vices.
Looking deeper into personal accounts, I can see he came to rely on alcohol as a way of coping with the stress.
Rolly Crump remembers this well.
The nurse told us this, that Walt would always have a glass of scotch before he left the studio and went home.
It was his afternoon sort of cocktail that was really, I think, a pain remedy more than anything.
I can see alcohol use has been associated with several forms of cancer, including cancer of the mouth, breast, bowel, and liver. But there is no link to lung cancer, so I can rule it out in Walt's case.
But it wasn't just stress that caused Walt to hit the bottle. One tragic event when he was 37 would change Disney forever.
The death of the mother is probably the most horrendous thing that happens in Disney's life.
Snow White put the studio on a sound financial footing. It also allowed Walt to buy his parents a house just around the corner.
In the home, there was a faulty gas heater. And during the night, Walt's mother asphyxiated.
Historian Tom Seto.
Disney took it very hard and blamed himself.
Strikingly, many of Walt's subsequent movies feature characters without mothers.
I think that's something he very much carried with him.
This is psychologist Dr. Linda Papadopoulos.
The missing mother, whether she's dead or whether she's incarcerated or completely non-existent, there is that kind of mother-shaped hole, as it were.
Like Bambi losing his mother, Dumbo loses his mother. That always seems to be happening.
I can see that Walt also relied on another vice to cope with stress and grief, smoking.
According to Rolly Crump, Walt was always smoking.
We used to say that he'd light one cigarette with one match in the morning, and then he never used another match because he'd light cigarette from cigarette.
Disney smoked since he was young. He was smoking about 60 cigarettes a day.
I always smoke when I work.
That was just part of the American culture at that time.
Floyd Norman again.
Walt Disney puffing on cigarettes and coughing was not at all unusual.
Who are you?
So familiar was Walt's cough on the Disney lot that it became integral to his management style.
Whenever I heard a cough in the hallway, that was a warning to get back to work because Walt Disney was nearby.
There is no doubt smoking damages the heart and arteries. Inhaling tobacco smoke causes plaque to build up in the arteries, restricting the flow of blood to the heart. The carbon monoxide in cigarettes reduces the amount of oxygen in the blood and makes the heart beat faster. It would be remarkable if Walt's very heavy smoking habit did not weaken and damage his heart, which might have left him vulnerable to other things. But the link between smoking and lung cancer could hardly be stronger. Tobacco smoke is a toxic mix of more than 7,000 chemicals, as many as 70 of which are now known to cause cancer. The link between smoking and lung cancer started to be made in the 1940s and 50s, though as late as 1960, only one-third of all U.S. doctors believed that the case against cigarettes had been established.
Another shattering event that would impact on Walt's state of mind and potentially his reliance on his vices came in 1941. Disney's workers went on strike for better conditions.
The animators are like, why can't we have regular wages? Why can't we have standardized hours?
The strike really hurt him. And I know that it crushed him, that they struck against him.
To him, it was really an attack on him personally. This was his studio. He put everything of himself into it, and people are attacking him for being cruel, mean, and it became ugly.
The dispute was eventually settled, but the effect of the strike was profound on Walt, tells Floyd Norman.
He really felt his artists were part of his family, part of a team. They were going to do great things together. Walt felt betrayed. He truly felt betrayed.
It's clear from what I've discovered that the pressure Walt was under went way beyond just long work hours, and that he used both alcohol and nicotine as a means of coping right up to his death. I'm certain the alcohol would have had a significant effect on his heart, and the cigarettes would have damaged both heart and lungs.
But there is another intriguing episode in Walt Disney's history that had a serious impact on his health. It's fall, 1966, Los Angeles, 2 months before his death. Walt Disney is struggling with pain in his neck and legs. His doctor recommends Walt see a specialist. An operation may be necessary. Walt is unhappy that it will interrupt his work, but the thought of a simple operation to sort out his problem once and for all makes it worth agreeing. Walt Disney had injured himself more than 3 decades earlier.
After the breakdown, they said you might want to try some physical endeavors.
The physical endeavor Walt chose was polo.
The ball is rolling by Joan Crawford, and there's a mad career down the field.
For a while, there was fashion of polo playing. Disney wanted to be part of Hollywood society.
He buys 12 ponies, he starts a team, so he really throws himself into it. And I think this speaks very much to his work ethic,
says psychologist Dr. Linda Papadopoulos.
He's very all or nothing.
But Walt's polo career was brought to an abrupt end during one game. He damaged several vertebrae in his neck. Rather than going to a doctor, he goes to a chiropractor. At that time, it was not fixed well.
It sounds as though the injury never properly mended, and over the years, the damaged joints became calcified. Calcification is a normal part of bone healing, but if the injured bones are not correctly aligned, you can get pinched nerves, which can be very painful.
Once again, Walt turned to Hazel, the studio's head nurse.
He kind of looked at her to kind of relieve the pain from what happened when he was playing polo.
I don't believe that the polo injury directly affected Walt's heart, but it appears he relied on a medicinal whiskey to ease the pain. So indirectly, I believe the polo accident could have contributed to his death.
It's November 2nd, 1966, 6 weeks before Walt Disney's death. Walt is being checked over prior to the operation that, in his hope, will free up the pressure on the nerves in his neck. It's considered a routine procedure. Walt has a severe buildup of calcium around his spine, but there is something more worrying, a suspicious spot on his lung.
I can see that this spot is a nodule, a mass of tissue. Now, nodules are quite common, occurring in around 1 in 500 chest x-rays, and most are small and harmless. But Walt's nodule is large. This, combined with his smoking, makes it more concerning, with cancer a real possibility.
Disney had little space in his life for doctors and illness. As a character, Walt was driven. Any distraction from his goal was resisted. His father was an example of what not to do.
He'd agreed to an operation to release a trapped nerve, but the pre-op examination had worried his doctors, and with good reason. The spots visible in the x-rays are almost certainly malignant tumors. Lung cancer, the probable consequence of half a century of smoking.
Lillian and the family had nagged Ward about his smoking for years, but he couldn't quit. It's November 8th, 1966. Ward is on the operating table at St. Joseph's Hospital, which is just across the street from the Disney studio. Dr. Michael Hunter.
Walt had his left lung removed. That's called a pneumonectomy. This operation is performed when the cancer is located in the middle of the lung or has spread throughout the lung. This was a major procedure for someone in Walt's condition. Despite a poor prognosis, his doctors must have felt that the removal of the lung was the only option to extend his life.
Lillian Disney is given the prognosis. Walt has a malignant tumor that has spread to other organs.
Lillian was pretty much in a state of denial.
Sarah Nielsen again.
So I think she very fully understood what was happening with Walt, but she was going to deny it as long as she could deny it.
The doctors told Lillian that Walt has between 6 months and 2 years, but the doctors tell Walt that they think they have removed all the cancerous lesion and that with a little rest, he'll be as good as new. Any treatment is about extending Walt's life rather than curing him.
I can see that Walt was given cobalt therapy, an early form of radiation treatment that for the first time allowed tumors deep within the body to be targeted, in this case, possibly in Walt's other lung.
It's November 21st, 1966. It's 25 days before his death. Walt Disney checks himself out of the hospital.
I think in his mind, he understood that he was really sick and dying. He had a fear of death. He's walking around the studio. People were coming up to him that had spent their entire career with him, trying to be positive, trying to say farewell, trying to say thank you, trying to say, I mean, what do you say to Walt Disney when he's about to die? Everyone understood that Walt's not coming back.
It's November 25th, Palm Springs. Walt has flown to his second home in the exclusive California resort. Sick as he is, he takes scripts to read. Work is all Walt knows.
When he finds out he's sick and dying, his bucket list was pretty short. Continue working on the projects we're working on, oversee the studio.
His work is something he self-medicates with. It's the thing that gives him comfort, a sense of purpose.
The studio, until the last breath in his life, was his life. I mean, it was him.
But the pain is too much. 5 days later, he's flown back to Burbank and then driven straight to St. Joseph's Hospital.
Walt's pain was probably caused by the cancer itself, pressing on nerves, bones, and organs. Although the surgeons removed the lung as the site of its primary cancer, the cancer had metastasized, so it invaded other organs.
It's December 14th, 1966. Walt is in his hospital bed. 1 day before his death, his gaze is still fixed on the future. He's obsessed with Epcot, his experimental community of the future. He's lecturing his brother Roy about his plans.
He's on his deathbed and he's lying back and basically sketching on the ceiling what this might look like. So with his hand, he's kind of making the shape and explaining to his brother what he wants.
Psychologist Dr. Linda Papadopoulos.
Very ambitious people never look at what they've done. They look at what they haven't done. They're constantly looking forward.
But it's plain that Walt doesn't have much time. He's starting to go into a delirium, explains Tom Seto.
At the end, Disney was drifting in and out of consciousness, and he would go into a little bit of a delirium.
He went back to his early childhood in Missouri.
Historian Sarah Nielsen.
Even in his delirium, it was a space of comfort. It was a space of freedom. It was a space in which anything was possible, where he could be anybody.
It's December 15th, 1966. Walt's wife Lillian is at home when she gets a call. Walt has taken a turn for the worse.
She delayed coming. She dilly-dallied. And I think it was just like, I need the time to get ready for this. So when he died, she was not there.
Lillian had been told that Walt had between 6 months and 2 years, and yet less than 5 weeks later, she was having to prepare for his death. I know the cancer had metastasized. I can't rule out that the spread was more significant than the doctors had realized. I can see from reports that right at the end, Walt was complaining of cold feet. Now, this tells me that his circulatory system was failing and was also another indication that his heart was compromised.
Roy does his best to warm his brother's feet.
The last person with Walt at the end was his brother. Not Lillian, not his children. It was his brother. Roy was there in a really intimate way. I mean, to think about it, he was massaging his foot as he was dying.
You are listening to of the ABC News and Special Events Department. At 9:35 a.m. today at St. Joseph's Hospital in Burbank, California, showman Walt Disney died at the age of 65.
It was passed through the studio in a matter of seconds, just by word of mouth.
Roly Crump again.
And it was very tragic, very tragic.
Many people left the studio in tears. Men were in the parking lot at the Disney studio, weeping.
Very, very sad. Very sad day. Sad days in my life.
Dr. Hunter believes there's one more piece of the puzzle to help solve the mystery of why Walt Disney died so suddenly.
I believe the cobalt therapy that Disney underwent to treat his lung cancer could have had a damaging impact on an already weakened heart. The radiation breaks down the tumor, but the resulting debris ends up in the bloodstream. And this makes the blood thicker and sticky, which can place an added strain on the heart. Therefore, I can't rule out the cobalt treatment having played a part in Walt's accelerated death. Having made a detailed study of the information available on the death of Walt Disney, I believe these are the facts. The stress of running a studio added to the pain resulting from his 1930s polo injury saw Walt self-medicate with alcohol and cigarettes. At the same time, he maintained a shocking diet.
Walt Disney did not like to eat healthy food. He really preferred diner food. Hamburgers, hot dogs, a bowl of chili.
I believe all three will have weakened his heart. Walt had a cigarette in his mouth practically every waking hour for half a century. And lung cancer was the almost inevitable consequence. When first diagnosed, Lillian had been told that Walt had between 6 months and 2 years. But instead, he was gone in 5 weeks. The agonizing pain that he suffered in Palm Springs, where he flew immediately after his surgery, tells me that his cancer had metastasized, spread to other organs, and possibly further than his doctors knew. The removal of his cancerous lung would have put a huge strain on Walt's 65-year-old body, including his already damaged heart. I believe the cobalt treatment that followed could have added to this catalog of burdens. Ultimately, Walt's death from cardiac arrest following lung cancer at the age of just 65 was avoidable. The stress he put himself under and the vices he developed to cope with that stress all contributed to his early demise. For Walt Disney, to work was to live, and the pleasure he derived from bringing pleasure to millions of people around the world was undeniable. You could argue he paid with his life, but I believe for a man as committed to his dream as Walt was, it was a price he would have been willing to pay again and again.
Walt was a man who entertained not just America, but he entertained the world. The world lost something with the loss of Walt Disney.
I miss him.
You're going to make me cry.
He was the sweetest man that was ever put on this planet. You had to know him. You had to work with him. And it was incredible.
Disney is a recognizable person 50-some years after his death, which is pretty remarkable.
It It's about quality family entertainment. And Disney built that. And as a single artist having such a major effect on world media, there's really nothing like him.
Thank you for listening to the last hours of Walt Disney. In the next episode, we'll investigate the death of Aretha Franklin. Autopsy, the podcast, is produced by ITV Studios and Audio House. If you enjoyed this episode, please make sure to leave a review on your favorite podcast app.